What would happen if we chose to really tell the truth about ourselves? I'm not saying that it's true. I'm saying that it's my truth.
You're listening to Hammered.
After returning to our car, Josh drove us all the way back to Filoti, which was this sort of small local town near Mount Zeus. So we were really starving, and we chose this restaurant and beautiful outdoor seating, just a quaint, quaint little town, Filoti. So if you ever get a chance to go there, you've got to visit. And it was a restaurant where a lot of the locals were eating, so we knew it had to be good. And of course, we ordered way too much food because, you know, when you're that hungry, you just tend to overorder. But there were a few cats around, and I think Samara was slipping them something on the side. But we just continued our conversation. We continued learning more and more about each other. And it was fascinating to me that, you know, these people were half my age, but the similarities and the things that we go through. And, you know, what I was really getting was how full of energy I become by being around younger energy. It really lifts me up, and it really helps me to just feel more connected. I don't really know how to describe it, but you know, they're younger, so they're not as tainted. They're not as jaded. They don't have as many, like, negative outlooks on things. But believe me, they're very tapped in, and they're real with it a lot more than most people I know, at least these two people were. And, you know, just really smart, really educated. I just learned so much. We had such just really enriching conversations. And it made me realize that, you know, this is what I desire really more than anything, is these kind of connections with people. And it really kind of shined another spotlight on some of the things that I've been lacking, because, you know, I've isolated myself for so long in this work world and in this physical world of just survival, that I've really robbed myself of some relationships and opportunities. And, you know, and also it sort of let me off the hook a little bit, because I beat myself up a lot of times because I feel like a lot of people will ask me to go do things or invite me to things, and my gut will just, it sort of talks me out of things sometimes. And I'm starting to realize that a lot of those times it's self-preservation. A lot of those times it's not a judgment. It's just that I don't feel like hearing some of the things that some of the groups that I know talk about. It's materialistic. It's negative. It's gossipy. Sometimes it's just not uplifting. And so I just realized that, you know, I have been so careful in my life for so long that expanding like this is what will allow this next phase, this next chapter, this next journey. Is that's how we draw in people to our lives. You know, it's the law of attraction. It's what we radiate out is what we're going to pull back. And I found myself really enjoying what I was radiating out, because I was pulling back some great relationships with people on very brief encounters. But you know, sometimes, you know, Marianne Williamson used to talk about the dull existence. She said sometimes you can have a even like a one night stand. You know, she kind of put it in terms of sometimes you can meet someone and have the most enriching, deep, satisfying relationship in a week more than some people have in a 30-year marriage. And I got it. I completely understand that because Josh and Samara had become my soulmates like in one day. And so we drove back, and on the drive back, you know, I'm in the little back seat, but I leaned forward and we were just talking about family dynamics and, you know, rejection and being rejected by people and being rejected by family because you don't fit in. And, you know, they were sort of in those categories too. And I just love them. And, you know, I didn't want our night to end, but it had to. They took me back and, you know, we were like, I don't, and they had to go home and pack and they had to get ready to go back to New Jersey, you know, and so they took me back to Grotto Hill and the wind was blowing and it was, the street lights were shining and the cats were darting here and there. And, you know, they came in and we wanted to show Josh my terrace, but it was night, but you could hear the ocean and he came out and looked out back and they stood in my little apartment and they had brought me a bunch of food from their Airbnb host that had made them tons of food and they didn't want to like throw it away. So they brought me a bunch of stuff. And so we just all kind of stood there laughing and grinning and like, okay, this is a beginning. This is not an end. And we hugged. And as they were walking up the street, I could see them under the streetlights and out of my mouth, I just yelled, I love y'all. And it just came out of me and I meant it and they turned around and, you know, and then they got up the road and I didn't have any water. I had no water. I'd forgotten to go to the store and they had one large bottle in the car. And so I text and I was like, can I have that bottle of water? And they're like, hold on a minute. And so Samara runs it back and we get to hug one more time and then they were gone. But we stayed in touch as they, you know, the airport, the takeoff, the landing. I just wanted to kind of stay connected. And we're still connected. And I'm going to see them in a couple of weeks. I'm going up to New York and we've already planned to get together. So I'm so excited about that. I have a feeling that Samara may be doing some retreats with me. You know, we kind of started brainstorming and with her background and her talent, I said, you know, man, this is going to be something. And so, you know, it's like these breadcrumbs and these puzzle pieces are starting to come together. And this is what the excitement is about. This is what makes the journey interesting. It's not about getting to the destination on a retreat. It's about the creation. It's about how this is coming together, how these little pieces are starting to fit, and how the universe is 24/7 always working behind the scenes. And I've known that for years and decades. I've known that the universe knows what it's doing. Well, this time the universe really showed up and it really showed me some things that just gave me even more confidence about the road that I'm on. You know, because if you ask me, what's the road I'm on? I'm like, I don't know. All I know is that it is unfolding in front of my face and I'm just following its lead. And it's all about what it feels like. If it feels like to go down there and take their picture, then do it. If it doesn't feel right, then don't do it. But weigh these things out. Every little thing, I've just been really trying to boil it down to what feels good and what feels not so good. Then do the thing that feels good. It's not that hard to figure out, Jill Haney. And so, you know, that when they left, I felt an emptiness, you know, and like, and I'd only been with them several days, but it was kind of like we had formed this bond and they kind of had a sadness and we talked and, but I went on about my journey and I finally was going to go into the old market, which is in downtown Naxos, Clora. And I started walking around and I was just going to let it guide me. And I started kind of going shops and here and there and looking. And there's so much to take in and so much local art and so much beauty. And, you know, there's some places that are kind of uppity, like the clothing stores. You know, the women kind of looked at me like, what do you want? So that felt funny, but that's okay. You know, I don't, I just don't wear like long flowing dresses. So, I just walk in stores. I'm not there to shop sometimes. I just like to take it in. So I walked in this one place and there was a woman behind a desk and she had on dark black kind of horn rim glasses and she looked pretty serious and I could tell, she probably gets sick of answering questions for tourists and that whole thing, but she had a lot of these hand-carved marble, Naxos marble, Cycladic art from the Cyclades. And these are the figures that have very bland faces, no face really. It's sort of just the nose, a bridge of a nose, and slender body. It's very interesting. And these pieces were replicates of the 3,000 year ago, originals. And so I asked her a couple of questions about the marble, and she said, she was telling me there's two types of marble, and so we start talking. Anyway, she had a background in art history, and she had actually studied in Athens, but was from Naxos, and her name was Kiaki. I can't pronounce it. I try, but super intelligent, super smart. And finally, she says, "Pull up a chair," and I pulled up a chair, and we start talking. And I was in there for 2 hours, okay? And I learned so much. I learned about why the buildings are white in Greece. I learned about this art. I learned about the marble. She showed me pictures of her aunt, who's a marble sculptor. I mean, amazing stuff. These pieces, ranged from hundreds up to thousands. They were just gorgeous. I wish I'd have bought one. I just really didn't have it in my budget, but I will go back and get one of those. But we became friends instantly, and she loved music, all these different kinds of music. She really liked Nick Cave, who I'm not familiar with, but I've seen that name and around, and I thought, well, maybe I'm supposed to listen to him. But our time together was just fantastic, and we exchanged contacts and social media and all that. And I didn't want to leave her. I had so much fun, and I said, well, I hope I can find you again, because those stores and shops, it's like a maze. They created it that way to confuse the pirates that would attack the islands, and so the castle was above. And when these pirates would come on, they would get confused and lost in these mazes. And so now, these mazes are now shops and restaurants and cafes and things like that. So that encounter was great, and I knew that we would see each other again. I just felt a really strong connection to her. And so I went on, and the next several days I worked on some more recordings, and now it was time to meet a man who I had actually contacted months before I'd come to Naxos. And he was a videographer, and his business is called Island Videography. And his name is Evangelos. And he told me, just call him Yvonne. Evangelos, beautiful man. So I finally am going to meet him, and I meet him in a cafe, and we have a coffee. And he can speak pretty good English. He's really tapped in. He was a very, very deep spiritual soul. I knew it the minute I shook his hand and hugged him. I felt his presence. I felt his energy. I knew that I had chosen this person from a YouTube video. I had been watching some YouTube videos of filming of the Temple of Apollo and how I had had that dream and it would not leave my brain. I kept seeing that over and over and over. And I thought, am I supposed to have some sort of filming in front of this temple? Like maybe I'm just supposed to do this and put it on this YouTube channel. I don't know. But I met with him and we started talking. And he asked me, asked him where he lived. He told me different places. And he says, "Have you ever been to Ikaria?" And I looked at him and I said, "Ikaria, like in that documentary?" He goes, "That documentary called The Blue Zone, How to Live to Be 100." And he brought the documentary up first, actually. And I said, "I just saw that before I left. Oh my God." And he said, "You have got to go there, Jill. You have got to go there." He said, "The energy there I'm telling you. And he lived there for 1 year. And I picked his brain about Acaria. And I said, I will go there. I'm going to go there. And we had this long talk. I told him the whole story of how I even thought about Greece, how Greece got on my radar. I told him the whole story of my first trip to Greece, the Roses saga. I told him the whole story of the dream I had of sitting in front of that temple of Apollo with my eyes closed and then my eyes opening like it was a dream. So we had this long coffee conversation, and I was just falling in love with him, you know, on a deep spiritual level. I knew that this was my person. And I told him, I said, I watched so many different videographies of Naxos and drone videos. And I said, and yours is the one that spoke to me. And when I looked on his website, now this will really blow your mind, he actually had a filming documentary of women repairing and doing restoration stonework on one of the Greek islands. And I said, are you fucking kidding me? No, no kidding. And I said, this is my man. This is my guy. So with that, we started talking and we decided to meet. And we met early one morning down at the port, and which leads to the Portera, which is this Apollo temple. He had his drone, which was hilarious because now I'm going to have to walk and I've got this drone following me above and I can hear it like zzz. And so he just said, just go walk casually. I know what I'm doing. And I just said, okay. So I began my journey, my pilgrimage up the pathway, which I had already been a couple of times. And there was one man sort of in front of me, and he could hear the drone. And he kind of starts looking up, and he's real confused. And I was kind of behind him. And I said, just keep walking. It's okay. I said, it's filming me. And he's like, oh, and he kind of laughed and he kind of moved on. But there was nobody else around really, which was interesting because that place is very touristy, but we got there early. So I'm walking along and I'm thinking about how bizarre this is and how bizarre that trust in my dreams and my instincts has brought me to actually walking around this temple being filmed by a drone for some reason. I don't know what, but I'm just going with it. And so then he finally got what he needed, and he kind of signaled me, and he came on up the hill with his bag and his tripod and everything. And we got up to the temple. He said, I want to take some really close-up shots of you. And of course, in my mind, I'm like, oh no, you're going to get my face up close and wrinkles and whatever. And, you know, I cut my own hair and it's just going to be all shaggy. And I kind of like worried about it. And then I thought, fuck it, who cares? Like, you know, this is what you got, so it's okay. So he gets in my face and he's got this camera like really close. I'm telling you, like 2 to 3 inches away from my face. He's very close. And I could hear a little group of people. And I heard this woman go, is she a model? Now, Vaughn did not flinch. He didn't laugh. He's very serious in his work. And I'm inside just mortified. And I'm wanting to go, no, I'm not a model. Like, you know, but it was, of course, it's like, I'm thinking in my mind, I'm sure they're thinking, ooh, how can she be a model? And all the negative thoughts. And then I was like, screw it. Yeah, I'm a model. I'm a model to society. I'm a model to tell the fucking truth. You want to hear the truth? Come over here. I mean, all that starts coming in too. And that's that part of myself that's the defender, I guess. But, and then I just dropped it all. And I got back in the moment. I got back with Yvonne. I got back in the energy. And so he got what he needed, and we walked, and then we went up to the castle. And we got up to the castle, and that's when I started feeling and touching some of the stone. And he filmed me in some areas that actually, you know, I'd been up there a little bit before, but very, very powerful moments. And I was so curious to see how this was all going to turn out. And so, you know, with that being said, I thought this would be a great way to start my TED Talk, like an introduction to the TED Talk, and have to use this video as the introduction to the new porch cast, which I'm going to be creating. So I spent time with Yvonne, and then we went our separate ways. And it was time for me to start getting ready to for my next adventure, which was going to be in, I think it's Agios Procopios. Agio Procopius, and it's, I probably didn't say it right, but that was a further down the island. It was near a beach, very beautiful, and that's where the writing retreat was going to take place. And so before I left, you know, Dimitri, my little landlord, she came up, and she's not little, but you know, it's like she's young, and we just had like this talking, hugging, I'll be back. You know, I felt like I had this new family up there on Grotto Hill. And, you know, we exchanged information. She got the podcast, you know, and so we had the best time saying goodbye. She brought me some marmalade and I just hugged her and I just love this girl. And I felt like I was leaving home. I felt so connected to that area and that terrace and my little apartment. And I think I could have stayed there forever. I really do. And so this sadness came over me, but also it was like, I'm going somewhere now, another uncharted territory with new people. And what is this going to be about? So, and it was only like a 12-minute taxi ride. So I take the taxi, I go down, here we are at the new place. I get out, lady greets me, and it was a place called Camara or Camara, C-A-M-A-R-A, like Camara or something. But it was kind of a boutique hotel. It was very clean. It was very nice. And I had a private balcony. And I'm like, oh, this is super cool. And I could look out my balcony and see the Aegean Sea again. Thank goodness. I don't want to separate. There was also a mountain. And it was kind of like you were up in this balcony looking down over like some residential little homes and little gardens and, you know, beat up cars and just life happening, you know, and you could hear sounds and smell smells and just the beauty, you know. And so I got in my room and everything and I got all situated and I noticed across the way there was another balcony and there was a girl with long dark hair and she was very beautiful and I tried not to look and I'm thinking, I wonder if she's in the workshop. And of course, you know, I'm all curious, like, who am I going to meet in this writing retreat? I was really intimidated because, you know, I don't have any experience in writing. I have experience in talking and telling stories. But I was assured that, you know, writing is storytelling. And the lady that was in charge of this that had emailed me back and forth's name was Lisa. And so I got unpacked and she had already WhatsApped me several times and said, let me know when you're there. And I had let her know. So I went off looking for the store to go get water and stuff. And as I was walking down the road, I see a couple approaching and they look like Americans. And it was a man and a woman. And sure enough, it was Lisa and Scott, who are the facilitators of Right Away Europe. And they actually live in Bulgaria now and had lived on Paris Island for 10 years, which is across from Naxos. So they were very seasoned in Greek culture. And actually, Scott is part Greek. So we said hello, we hugged. I said, oh my God, I'm here. And, you know, we just kind of laughed. And she assured me, it's you're in the right place. And so, because I'm not shy about telling my insecurities, you know, it's just a way to like break the ice because it's true. I mean, I'm not going to put on some front and be like, oh yes, I'm here to the writing retreat to share my wisdom with all of you. I mean, it's really like, I'm just here to sort of take it in. And I didn't realize how much I would actually participate. I didn't really think I would participate at all. I thought I would just be sort of an observer. And so anyway, I got my stuff. I came back and we were all going to meet around 5. And so we met around the table. We all met in the room and we had to introduce ourselves. And so that was interesting, you know. And if this was going to be a smaller group because a couple of the people had gotten ill and couldn't make it. And so I felt very privileged and very honored to be in such a small group because it was going to be really hands-on. I think we were going to get a lot of attention. So, you know, Scott opened it, Lisa opened it, and then they kind of opened the floor for us to introduce ourselves. And so then the girl who was across the balcony from me, she kind of came in a little bit late and So she sat down, and her posture, she was sitting kind of low. She was very tall. She was about 6 feet. She looked about 6 feet. And she sat down in her chair and just really, really beautiful. And but she seemed kind of shy, and she leaned forward, and her body language was sort of like she was sinking kind of low in her chair, you know, and she smiled and looked around. And so we went around the room, and there was a woman that was 80 years old, and Mulata, and I kept calling her Mulatia, which they were getting on to me about that, but it's Mulata, and she was from Czech Republic, Prague. And what an interesting woman. So she sort of tells, you know, that her daughters had given her this trip because they want her to write her story for their grandkids, but she didn't seem real impressed, and she didn't seem real excited to be there. She seemed a little bit standoffish. Her body language just a little bit reserved, and sort of an eyebrow up, like, who are these people, you know? And then there was a girl from Singapore who had actually been born in India, and Malika, and just on fire. You know, she was very talkative. She was very fast. She was very articulate. Her vocabulary was brilliant. Her eyes were brilliant. She had very, very intelligent eyes. And I've learned over my life, and I don't know if this is just something that I came up with, but I swear, it's like sometimes I can see people's minds working through their eyes. And I saw in her that this woman right here is brilliant, and I can't wait to get to know who she is. And so it was just us four, me, Malika, Sarah, who's the beautiful girl from British Columbia. She was from Vancouver. And so she began to speak. Malika talked next, and she was was on sabbatical, and she had been in Germany and the Netherlands, and she had already been on like a stint of trips. So now she was at this writing retreat and was there because she wants to become a writer. She had a big corporate job, and so she was there to do this. And then Sarah, the one from British Columbia, from Vancouver, she was a screenplay writer slash actor. And then there was me. And I told my little story of how I started in storytelling when Anita Kava, my good friend, asked me to tell a story at her house. And that started this whole thing. And Anita is really my muse. Anita was the person that just said, you need to be a storyteller. And I said, well, I got a million of them. And she goes, no. And she put her finger in my face, and she goes, I'm telling you, you need to be a storyteller. And Anita was another person that I recognized had very, very smart eyes. And I knew that Anita was not blowing smoke to me. And that's why I said yes to her, because I say yes to the universe when I feel a tug or a pull. So we were in our opening, and we all did our introductions, and then we went to go have dinner. And so it was a great, you know, outdoor cafe. It was very crowded. It was very Greek, and it was just great. And so we all got to know each other and a little bit, you know, and that started it. And so then the retreat started. And through this week, you know, I'm not going to go into all the many, 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 many details, because there are so many details of this. All the experiences that we all had together, it just started to expand, and it started to open up thoughts and ideas and possibilities that never in my wildest dreams thought that I would even think about. I would have never told you that I'm a writer. I would have never thought that I could be a writer. But every assignment, and they weren't really assignments, but they kind of were, because I kept laughing, going, I got to do my homework. I was getting all nervous. And Malika would run to her room and do her homework, because she's, you could tell she was that A personality. And Sarah and I would go to the beach and kind of be meandering and eating gelato and having a great time. And then be like, oh, we got to get back. We got to go right. And I kept blaming her, being the saboteur. I go, you've already got training and all this stuff, and I don't know it, and I got to get back, and I got to do my homework, and blah, blah, blah. But really, I'm just having a blast, and I don't even care. And I knew that I could whip it together, and I'd get back to my room. I would make coffee, and I would sit there, and I'd be like, okay, Right. And I would write, and then we'd tear out to get to the class. And then Scott and Lisa, they would do these little warm-ups, and then we would read our stuff. And I did it, I did it. I did all of it. And I was so excited, and I was so proud of myself for doing it. And it just, I think sometimes maybe I work better under pressure. I don't know. But what a fun experience, and what an education. And I'm telling you, it was like the sky broke open, the heavens broke open, and gave me people that I could sit with and talk to for hours. And I was been starving. I've been starving for this. I've been starving for this kind of stimulating conversation of learning. And now a lot of things that Scott talked about went way over my head. And Lisa too, they have so much experience. They're so well read. They're very scholarly, and I just never been around that much. I've been around some pretty damn smart people in my life, but in one sitting, So it just I can't really even tell you how life-changing this has been for me, and the friendships I made with these three other women that were part of the retreat, and to see each one of them just unfold, and to see, Malika, who was very tight and very, on point, and to see her just totally relax into like, I'm buying that statue. I'm gonna buy that statue of Venus and take it home. It's like a little nude marble carving. And she said, in her culture, she was afraid to put that in her house. And I'm like, baby, you got to step into your power. And and I gave them all a rock that I had found, because I always carry a stone in my pocket. And it's I call it my appreciation stone. And anytime I start getting down or worried or whatever, I reach in my pocket, and I've had this moss amber in my pocket since I was in Mexico, down at the yoga retreat when I went with Janet Dawn. I got this piece of amber that has moss inside of it. So if you hold it up to the sunlight, it's got the golden amber, but it's got a dark green moss inside. Before I left, Yvonne, the videographer, I reached in my pocket and I pulled it out, and I said, close your eyes. And he closed his eyes, and I put this in his hand, and I told him, I said, I want you to have this because I'm going to pass this on to you. It's from Mexico, and I know I'll get a rock here in Greece. When I was with him, we were looking at his camera when he was replaying some of the video. And he reached up and he put his arm on my shoulder, kind of like, when like you do that, like with a buddy, you know what I mean? Like, and he put his arm up on my shoulder, and I put my arm around him, and we were standing in front of the castle, and there were people walking by. And it was a total like friend, close, energetic connection. There was nothing weird about it. There was nothing. It was intimate. It was a close, intimate moment with another human being on this planet that from different backgrounds, but I could almost feel his heartbeat. And I will never forget that. And so a few days later, he texts me a picture of that little rock sitting on his laptop, and he had put a heart beside it. And I'm not kidding, it touched me so deeply. So I had gathered a bunch of really beautiful stones in different beaches I'd gone to through these 3 weeks, and I had a little bag, and so I went through them and I laid them out on my bed, and I thought of each person in that retreat, including Scott and Lisa, the facilitators, and I let my intuition be the guide on which stone would be for each person. And so when we were getting ready to start saying goodbye that morning, we were all sitting at the breakfast table, and I pulled these stones out, and I told each person the explanation of why I chose the stone and what I had seen in them. I wasn't doing a psychic reading by any means, but it sort of felt that way because I felt like I was reading them from the beginning and now what I had seen at the end. And Milada, the 80-year-old woman from Prague, pulled me to the side and she looked up at me. She was real small. I called her my little nugget. And she said, "I loved you. I loved your voice. I loved how slow." I said, "Because I talk so damn slow, you could understand me." She could understand me more than anyone else because I talk slower. She said to me, she said, "The first night we were here, I was so frustrated at you and you telling these things like, that's not true. That can't be true, because I told how I ended up in Greece and why I was there because of a dream." And she said, "And you know, all the week you telling these personal things and I'm thinking, why would anybody tell these personal, very, very personal stories?" And how, but she said, "But I know now. I know now, and I loved it, and I love you, and you know," and I hugged her, and I looked at her blue Aegean ocean eyes. She swam every day. At 80 years old, this woman runs circles around all of us, you know, and she told us about her summer camps in Czech Republic and how they were kind of like raised in the outdoors and nature, and her life was so rich and her. But when she would talk about the communism and some of the hardships, her body language would shift into not so open. You could see it. She would dim. Her light would dim. But when she talked of things that lit her up, it was like that woman transformed. And one morning at breakfast, she started telling me about a relationship that she had had with a man who was 20-something years younger than her. And she went into a long story of love. And I listened and I listened and I listened. And she had been in her 40s when she'd met this person. And I could totally relate. I could relate on so many levels, being drawn to younger energy. And she said, you know, her husband had passed away. She'd raised her daughters. And when this guy came into her life, it was the most adventurous, open, and free she had ever been in her whole life. And I could look at her telling me this story, and she was in it. She was completely reliving it, telling me this story. And I'm thinking, now you write this. You write this down. This is what we write about. These are the things that we write about. We write about the memories that turn us on. We write about the things that light our soul and ignite the things inside of us. That's what we want to leave behind to our nieces and our nephews and our grandkids and whoever. Not the history of the Communist Party. And I think, you know, her daughters probably, they want her to leave her history. They know she's got a rich life. But I think she kind of got it that, and I told her, I said, "Listen, Milada, they don't want to know the strategics of those histories. They want to know who you are." And I said, "And I'm learning who you are on such a level." And so I asked her, finally, I said, "How did it end? How did this relationship end? Because all good things come to an end." And she said she had to end it. And she said she took to the bed, and she had never, ever, ever in her life had that kind of grief and had that kind of pain through all the different disasters of a lifetime of war and famine and scarcity and all the things that that woman had gone through. This heartbreak, this love affair, this thing that she had experienced just about did her in. And I sat with tears and I listened and I said, "I know exactly what you're talking about." And we shared that moment together, and I just realized how important it is to share these stories with another human being and to rekindle these moments within ourselves, to feel these emotions again. You know, they don't die. These emotions don't go away. They're forever in us. And sometimes we don't want to visit because we don't want to feel, because sometimes the joy is painful. You know, in that situation, the joy was painful, but she pushed through and she let it out. And I was so grateful, and I'm forever grateful for her telling me that story. And so, you know, here we are approaching the end of this. And Sarah, my beautiful friend across the way, she was like, hey, do you want to go to Santorini? Now, I was scheduled 2 more days at this boutique hotel because I couldn't get my flight out. And I'm like, I don't know. I better not. No, I don't know. She goes, well, just check your flight. All you got to do is you could probably switch it. And I'm thinking, okay, Jill, if the universe says, you know, that I can do it, then I'll do it. So I called, a guy got on the phone on, you know, Sky Express Airlines, and he's like, oh yeah, we can change for €1.59. And I was thinking $159. It was like, no, €1.59, $1.59. He's, you know, like almost $2. And I'm like, that's all? Okay, we'll change it. And then I called the hotel that she had already had a room. I got a room there. It all worked out. Boom, boom, boom. And I couldn't get out of my Airbnb there, but that was okay. It wasn't very expensive. And I felt like the universe was calling me to go with Sarah to Santorini. So we had made that plan, and it was time to say goodbye to everybody. And Malika, the girl that lived in Singapore, we hugged, and, you know, I looked at her and I just said, it's time to step in your power. You're already in your power, but just take it home with you, baby. Just take it. And we've all planned to go to Bali next year together. I want to also see if we can all go to London and meet Malata in London where she lives. She doesn't live in Prague anymore. Eventually, she said she'll probably move back there. But we have some bonds now that will be, I'm hoping, for a lifetime, because we just got to really share some really, really deep, deep things with each other, and also walk away knowing that we're all writers, you know. And Scott and Lisa, they pulled the writer out of all of us. And another little side note that really got me was Scott, one night at dinner, we started talking, and he said, you know, we started talking about the Atlanta Braves, and he said, well, my best friend from high school is Greg Maddux. And I'm like, what? My jaw drops. And of course, I'm picking his brain all about Greg Maddux because I'm a real big Braves fan. And that was really great. And so that time, you know, was just, I will never be able to, I just can't put it into words. It was just a really great time, and I love these people, and they helped me so much. And so my quest now, as I get ready to head back to the United States, was to take all this richness inside of myself and let it sort of marinate. And I had to get ready to leave. And it was, you know, Sarah and I got to Santorini, and we had a few days there, and that was a whole nother thing. You know, we hiked the volcano, we ate, and actually Sarah Kelly, from Vancouver, British Columbia, is my very first porch cast. So we sat out on her porch in Santorini, with the Aegean Sea behind us. And I said, what a better place than to kick off the porch cast with you, a screenplay writer, an actor. And I'm not going to spoil it. I'll wait until you see the interview about her. But what was so funny about this is that Alex had taught me how to use these wireless mics. Stuart and Alex, we had met before I left Asheville, and we had already started talking about the production of the podcast and how that's going to be. And I had to go. Stuart suggested I get the new iPhone, which they were all laughing about that because they were like, nobody's got the new one, but the wide angle lens. And we had discussed how that was going to be. And so I knew how to use these. So I set her up. We're ready for the interview. Her balcony was right connected to this other balcony, you know, like 3 feet away from us. And this couple comes out, and they see exactly what we're doing. They know that we're totally doing an interview. We're already in it. We're already talking. We're already looking at the camera. We're already doing it. Well, they just start dragging chairs and putting their stuff on the table and talking and sort of glancing. And I'm like, oh no, like, is this going to totally fuck everything up? And so it was like they couldn't take a social cue, and I kind of jetted my eyes over there a couple of times, like, hey, like, knock it off. And then they finally settled on down eating their bread and olive oil. And then we ended the We actually had to pause it because it started to get dark. And Sarah, thank goodness she's from that world, and she noticed it and kind of whispered, like, pause it. So I paused, and then we had to start it up again and turn the porch light on. And hopefully, I know Alex will edit this, but the thing is, I don't really care. I want this to be so authentic and real. And it's going to be, honey, believe me, it's going to be real, really real. So after we turned everything off, the couple, they're like, "Oh, can we ask what y'all are doing?" And kind of nosy. And we were like, "Sure." And so we started telling them who we were, what we were doing, told them about the podcast, told them about the porch cast, and then they're starting to tell, "Oh, we're from New Jersey." And I'm like, "Of course you are. Like, what is up with that?" So they start talking, and they had a little bit of a little bit of aloofness, mostly the guy. He was very nice, but there was a little bit of pretense in there. And so Sarah and I could kind of read, and we were like, "Let's go," because we hadn't eaten yet, and we were ready to go eat. And so we took off to go find a restaurant, and we end up at this real swanky place, but it was gorgeous. Santorini is out of this world. It is just so beautiful. Morning, noon, and night, middle of the night, the place is just fucking beautiful. Okay, it's all I can say. Well, we find this restaurant, and we go down these big steep flight of steps, and there's a team of people to let us come in, and we go in, and we sit kind of above it at a bar, kind of a counter overlooking a whole nother dining area. All of this is in open air, okay? And it's got like the cafe lights. It's just so beautiful. I can't tell you. But there was a table of four young women, okay? And they were all dressed to, they were dressed for the Oscars, okay? They were eyelashes 42 miles long. They were, they were like major Hollywood looking influencer type blobbity. They had their fucking phones all out in front of their faces, filming themselves with their plates of food in front of them. It was like watching something on another planet. It was like watching something that was just making you want to jump off of a cliff, okay? You're sitting in one of the most beautiful settings in the world, and you're looking at yourself on this phone and doing their faces. You know how they contort their lips and all that shit? We were cracking up, and I said, "You can't make this up. You can't make this up." But as I sat and I watched them, and then the beautiful food. Now, this food was art. It wasn't even food, it was art. And I wish we'd have known that, because we wouldn't have gone there because we were starving. And there's no substance in food art. It's like you get a little tidbit. So, but as I watched these young women, they were probably, mid-20s. They had ordered this restaurant wanted you to buy like the full-fledged, where they bring it all in courses and it's hundreds of dollars and all that. And we were like, no. But we watched them, and I was taking it all in, and I was thinking, this is where the United States has come to. These are the people that we call influencers. What are they influencing? Are they influencing a line of makeup? Is it a line of clothing? Are they influencing young girls to want to be like them? Are they influencing their cleavages? What are they influencing here? And I really started thinking about how we have become such a consumer-driven, superficial, super fucking official country. It's all about who's got what. Who's got what? And I watched it all go down, and I looked around, and I saw so much of that in there. And it just went all over me, and I thought, why? Why does this go all over me so much? Am I so judgmental that I just can't just accept it for what it is? But it bothers me. It really bothers me, because I learned so much at this writing retreat about depth and richness and relationships and love and unconditional love. And I saw these four girls like critiquing themselves in a way that took me all the way back to my own body dysmorphia, to my own self-judgment, to my own criticalness of my hair and my clothes, and how I, this thing with Rosa and the clothes, and how I judge myself and the size of my hands and the size of my feet, and you know, all of those things. I just kept thinking about it and how that just rules people. It just rules women. It rules men too. I see it in men just as much as I do women. But how it made me even more aware of how important it is for me to do this Porchcast, and how important it's going to be for me to reach out to interview people who are making a difference in this world, who are truly, truly the real influencers, the people who work in hospitals, the people who work in, you know, factories, the people that work doing whatever, but the people that are giving of themselves and serving other people, to empower other people. And that's what my job is. My job is now to empower other people and to help people to tap into their own power and their own truth. And I know that's what it is now. And I'm very clear on that. And it took me going to Greece twice in 2 years in a row to sort of come to an awareness of what my true mission is. And my true mission is to speak my truth. And I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying it's my truth. But to speak these truths, the things that really move my soul, and to say it regardless of what you think. I love you so much, I don't care what you think, is what Esther Hicks always says. And I love that. I love you so much, I don't care what you think. But to be able to step into your own self. And one day around the writing table, we were all talking about how, you know, releasing this truth of ourselves, releasing these words, this languaging. And I looked at all of them and I said, it's like we are in a prison of ourselves, and we reach outside and the keys are hanging right outside of our prison cell. All we got to do is reach out and get those keys and unlock the door. And that's what writing is. Writing is taking those keys and unlocking the door. And I use this analogy. And one night I had a dream. And with all this Greek mythology and all this stuff stirring, I dream that I was in my apartment up on Grotto Hill, the one that I had stayed with the beautiful terrace and everything. I dreamed that I was in my room and it was a storm. And this really was true. There was a storm that night. And I could hear the wind blowing, like really blowing. And I could hear the ocean and the waves crashing up on the rocks. And it was very loud. And I went into a dream, and in this dream, I was in this little apartment, sitting in my bed, just like I do when I record these podcasts, but outside in the ocean was Poseidon, Apollo, Dionysus, Zeus. They were all out there hovering, and they were stirring the storm up. And inside, I started to scream. I don't want to be like this anymore. I don't want to be locked up inside anymore. And I was screaming it to the top of my lungs. And I was letting it out of myself. And I was going there. And I was just going there. And I released it. And I said, I'm not going to keep holding on to these stupid beliefs and these ridiculous thoughts about myself. This is not who I am. I am so much more than what I think I am. And I released it. And so it was time to go home. And I was just overwhelmed with joy and truth and whatever else. And so I left early. And a taxi driver picked me up, you know, in the dark. And I had already said goodbye to Sarah the night before, and I knew I was going to miss her. And so we kept texting, and it was so nice to be part of the writers group, because we had a WhatsApp page where we could stay in contact with each other and let each other all know when we got back to our own countries. And I boarded the plane in Santorini and got to Athens and had some time to kill and just sort of sat and reminisced and thought about everything. And I thought, you know, I can't believe I'm having to leave, but I know I got to go home to Minnie, my beautiful little Shih Tzu, and my friends and my family. And there's people waiting to hear these stories. And also, I have to go home because I have to do this podcast and I have to send this message out because I know there's something coming, y'all. I feel it brewing. I've known it for years and years, and I have always known it, and I feel like it's on the cusp. It's on the cusp of something really, really great that's coming my way, and I'm a catalyst. I've always been a catalyst, you know, and I'm here to catalyze whatever it is I'm supposed to catalyze. So I took off. Here we go. I sit down. I'm in my little corner. And this couple's beside me. And where, of course, are they from? New Jersey. You can't make this shit up. And we started great conversation. They end up getting the podcast. You know, it just all leads back to the podcast. Because, I mean, if you want to know anything about me, just listen to the podcast. So here we go flying, you know, 10 hours or whatever, land in New York. Now, I had to stay overnight. I had no idea that my Hyatt was smack in the middle of Chinatown, right near LaGuardia. So I took a yellow cab. I get to the hotel, and I'm like, are you kidding? And so there I am, and I'm out in this pouring rain. It's dreary. It's New York City, Chinatown, which I've never had been to, which is amazing. I was just captivated. I got a green tea milkshake for dinner because I just couldn't even get my schedule around what my body was doing with the time change. And I went to bed. It was probably 6 o'clock New York time, but I just had to lay down. And I woke up at 2, and the girl in the lobby had told me they serve coffee 24/7. So I go down to the lobby. It was 2:40. I'll never forget. And there were like young guys bringing in these like geisha looking hookers and stuff. And I'm like, oh man. And it was a rough hotel. Okay. It was not a place that I would ever stay again. It smelled like smoke. I think it was a smoking. It says no smoking, but they're smoking. And it was just kind of gross. I wouldn't recommend it, but it was fine. And so the girl, I said, I need 4 cups of coffee. And her eyes were like, what? And I said, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm up. I'm a writer. And I started laughing. And I'm like, Scott, Lisa, I'm a writer. I said it to the Asian girl in the lobby at the coffee bar. And you know what? I meant it because I am a writer and I'm a storyteller. And I've lived to tell the story. Something saved me from the rag pile. I don't know why, but I want to say that I am forever, forever touched and grateful for my experience in Greece. And I'm just getting started. And I will return. And I might live there one day. My goal would be to live part-time in Greece and maybe part-time in London around Malika and Malata, and maybe we can talk the others to come over. But life is just getting started for me, and I have so much excitement and positivity about where this is headed, and I want to take you on this journey with me. And I appreciate the listeners, the subscribers, and please, 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 I don't want to be like beggity about this, but please subscribe to my damn hammered YouTube channel. I don't know about all the technicalities, but I need to make money from my podcast. I've never made 1 cent, you know, and I got about $50,000 invested in Hammered. For what reason? I don't know, but just to keep it alive and keep it going. I've used up my savings, and I don't care because I can make more money. But I do feel like if you've gotten value out of these these episodes and this journey, then please subscribe to that channel and please share with your friends and ask them to subscribe. It's just hitting the dang button. And I didn't really know what that meant until somebody sort of explained to me, you know, if you get a certain number amount of subscribers, then YouTube will kind of start sponsoring you. And, you know, and that would free me to have some more experiences and to help with the production of the Porchcast. And so I just invite you to please subscribe. And the world is in my hands now to create whatever it is. And I could really use some support in that. I've used my body for almost 40 years now to make a living, and it's time for me to use my brain and my voice, and I feel like I've got a good handle on it now, and I have reached some clarity about myself that I'm very confident that I can do this, and I want to take you on this journey, and I also want to take you on these retreats, because we don't know where we're going until we know where we've been. And learning about using our past as a reference point. We don't use the past. The past is a tool. The past is a tool to check in and to say, hey, have I grown? Hey, am I stuck in limbo? Hey, where the hell am I? And, you know, by checking in with the past, it gives me a sense of a barometer of growth. And I want to share that, and I want to take people, and I want, you know, because when you go and you travel, you expand your mind and your perceptions, you learn, and it's just the best education ever. And Helena Grease told me back in episode 10 that her father said that travel is the best education one can have. We had to name our muse in the writer's retreat. We had to go around the circle and name our muse. And I want you to know that my muse's name is Helena Grease. And I had to laugh because I couldn't tell them, because if they're listening to the podcast, I didn't want any spoilers. But I said Helena Grease and they all kind of laughed. But I'm going to end this, and this will be the final audio episode of Hammered, A Story of an Insatiable Spirit. Get on board and follow what's to come next, because what'll be next will be switched to a video show, a podcast show that's going to take place on my porch, and it'll be the Hammered Porchcast. So stay tuned. I'll be having interviews with people. I'll be flying to some cities to interview people on their own porch. And I need your support, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart for all of your responses, your messages. So many people have reached out to me with just words of love and kindness, and I just can't even tell you how much gratitude and how much love I have, and my heart is so full. And, you know, if you've listened to this entire journey, then you know where I came from and you know the obstacles. And like Gail always told me way, way back in the day, don't give up 5 minutes before the miracle happens. And Jill, the best is yet to come.
Hammered is recorded and produced in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Asheville, North Carolina. It's narrated by Jill Haney, produced by Jill Haney, and with sound design, editing, and music by Alexander Rodriguez. Our beautiful artwork was created by Lauren Caddick, and we'd like to send a special thanks out there to Minnie and Robin. You can check out our website, podcasthammered.com, and follow us on social media for updates.